WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Cammie McCormick. The cuts to the federal government and workforce aren't over yet. Erica Brown begins our coverage.
President Trump says more government workers will soon be fired.
We're cutting down the size of government. We have to. We're bloated. We're sloppy. We have a lot of people that aren't doing their job. We have a lot of people that don't exist.
The announcement came as he held the first cabinet meeting of his second term.
Correspondent Nancy Cordes on where some of those cuts will come from.
President Trump said at one point that he had spoken to the head of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, former congressman from the state of New York, and that Zeldin had told him that he thinks he can cut 65% of the staff at EPA.
And Trump said Ukraine's president will come to Washington on Friday to sign that deal that will give the U.S. access to Ukraine's mineral wealth.
I'm watching soldiers being killed, Ukrainian and Russian soldiers being killed. My number one thing is to get that stuff. My number two thing is I don't want to have to pay any more money.
The measles outbreak in Texas has turned deadly, as Matt Piper reports.
Doctors say the child was not vaccinated. It is the first death in the measles outbreak that began late last month and the first in the U.S. since 2015. Dr. Lara Johnson with Covenant Health in Lubbock says they can only say the death was of a school-aged child.
Measles is very serious. There are lots of childhood rashes and fevers, and as parents, we all know that our kids get these here and there. This is not that. This is a much more serious illness.
She says they have about 20 people hospitalized right now with measles. Matt Piper, CBS News.
There was more bad news for American consumers today. The price of coffee is at a 50-year high. Economist Peter Goodman says climate change is partly to blame.
Rains have come at the wrong time in some places. Cold snaps have followed early springs, and in other places, there's just a lot of volatility.
Egg prices could jump 41% this year, according to the USDA's Stephanie Rose, who manages a cake shop, says they're trying not to pass on those costs.
We know a lot of other people are financially struggling, so in order to make it, we're just trying to keep it at a minimum of where we're at right now with the price.
In the Middle East, another swap is taking place, with Israel releasing Palestinian prisoners in exchange for the bodies of four hostages from Gaza. The Pope remains hospitalized in Rome. He's being serenaded by his supporters outside the hospital. The Vatican says he's shown further slight improvement. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com. For WXCO News, I'm Brittany Merlot. The governor is taking heat for some language in the state budget. Joanne Krulatz reports that he's unbothered.
Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers says there's no hidden agenda behind striking words, including mother and father, out of his proposed state budget and replacing with gender-neutral language. Evers says it's about legal protections for those using procedures like IVF to start a family.
Moms are moms, dads are dads, and what we want is legal certainty that moms are able to get the care they need. That's it. End of story.
The National Republican Governors Association called out the Democratic governor last weekend for using terms like parent and inseminated person in the budget bill.
It's mainly Republicans looking for an advantage during the time when they're under attack. That's what I think. That's their problem, not mine.
During a stop in Wausau this week, Evers said he's open to putting IVF protections in a standalone bill if it will get them passed. A spokesperson for the governor said similar bills have been introduced in the past but failed to advance.
And 9 Green Bay area breweries have come together to brew a beer to match the excitement of the NFL Draft 2025 coming to Green Bay in April. Lisa Hale tells us more.
The 8th Round Downtown Pale Ale will be available in the Draft City Music Fest and at local tap rooms. Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich.
Really encouraging people to visit, you know, all kinds of different amenities with all the tap rooms, restaurants and bars, and the Children's Museum to maybe Bay Beach, you know, having a couple of rides open. We really want to spread the wealth and encourage people to get around the community, and what greater opportunity than to advertise, you know, what we have from a craft brewing perspective.
Draft City Music Fest is part of the multi-day Touchdown Downtown, happening throughout downtown Green Bay from April 23rd through the 26th.
The Dom Salvia Show.
You know, Harvey, the seemingly purposeful no action. What's your sense on the leadership in the Dem Party right now, Harvey?
I'm ashamed of them. What did Trump have on all these people?
Yeah, right.
That we get this kind of silence. Will the Democratic leadership figure out that it's their task to start articulating a Democratic, small d, Democratic vision and project that these people can rally behind? Bam.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
And welcome back. It is our number two of the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. With Jeff Grass, I'm Chad Holmes, and we got a big second hour here on tap. Both our guests coming up a little bit later on. We'll be joined by Mosinee girls basketball coach Josh Howe, and first up, it's our student athlete guest for this week from DC Everest. Very happy to welcome back to the program, Cohen Preby. And yeah, Cohen, thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I wanted to bring you on because we obviously talked before, but talk about it was a little bit of a smoother run when we last talked a year ago, and this year it's been obviously we talk about ups and downs. I imagine that really is apropos for what you've been going through between the fall, your football season, getting injured at the very worst time, right at the end of the in the second half of your state semifinal, and then having to work your way back here in the winter. I guess before we get to specifics, what has the process been like emotionally? Because I imagine in your senior year, you have so much that you want to accomplish, to have to sit out and rehab in a big part of your basketball season, that to be very difficult.
Yeah, especially early on in my injury, like right when it happened, I knew basketball was coming around the corner. It was pretty hard for me. Just that I had to watch the guys, you know, sit at practice, watch a couple of few games. But, you know, as I started, you know, getting off the cast, getting off the crutches, I started gaining hope that I would get back like as soon as possible. And, you know, it's kind of started resonating with me that I would be back soon. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely better a lot than it was early on.
Well, how do you do, when I used to say our players would get hurt, like, you know, blow their knee out in football season and then maybe have hopes to make it in the last game. I mean, I feel bad. You know, high school injuries stink. I hate them. I feel really bad for any players.
There's no red shirts.
Yeah, and you don't get it back. I mean, what do you do to make that time not only constructive for yourself, but also stay engaged? You know, it's practice is sometimes hard enough when you got to participate in it because you want to get to the game, and now you got to sit there and watch all these guys. I mean, what was the mental aspect, or what did you do for yourself to try to stay engaged in that? I gotta imagine that's difficult.
Yeah. I tried to stay, especially like close with my teammates, just trying to help them out, like teach them as much as I knew. That really helped me stay focused with the team and kind of try to keep them like rolling while I was out. And then just trying to stay positive and like hoping I'll get back eventually.
And I gotta imagine it's as much as also a good psychiatric session where being around your buddies also helps you forget things, mellow out, you know, that camaraderie, because that tightness is why you're there too at the same time for that team bonding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we did team bond a lot, and it was, you know, obviously not playing, I got to, you know, kind of get to know guys more like on a personal level, you know, where I'd be able to relate to them. So it definitely helped when I got back to know guys more, know what they were doing, and yeah, stuff like that, yeah.
Something you said before we went on the air, because you know, I asked you about the injury, and you said no regrets. Can you maybe talk about the idea? Because you have been a really terrific basketball player for a number of years. You were part of a great run for your football team. But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, but you don't want to miss a big chunk of your senior year. But you say, nope, I have no regrets. Can you talk a bit about your thought on that, on playing football, taking what we call a risk and being injured, and then looking back and saying, well, still no regrets. Why do you feel that way?
Yeah, so obviously basketball is my favorite sport, but football, I still just had a love for the game, and I talked to my parents this summer about playing, and I was kind of on the fence, but, you know, they really pushed me, because, like, when I got older, would I be like, you know, do I regret not playing football? And I said yes, so I decided to play, and, I mean, great, great run. So, I mean, for any, like, high school kids out there, I would say never not play a sport because you're focused on another sport. It's nice to... Obviously, like, you don't want to miss your senior season of basketball, but playing football was, I had some of the best times of my life playing with the guys, and I had so much fun playing football.
And looking, you know, going into the basketball seasons, and when you shared, you know, I got to know my teammates that much better. How about some of the things that some of your buddies bring to the court? Because obviously you got time to watch them, maybe time to even critique a little bit, yeah, help out a little bit, because you could see so much of what they have, and I think that's what's going to make you guys that dangerous team down the stretch, is because you haven't seen yourselves at full strength. Like you said, yeah, you're getting back in the flow. But some of your teammates, who do you yeah, got with you, and what do they bring to the table that you enjoy about being part of the Everest team with them?
Yeah, senior with us, Casey Studeman, he's one of my good buddies. You know, he brings a lot of leadership, good play down low. He's a good post, hard matchup every night. Cade Felch, junior, he's really been stepping up this year, really stepped up when I was injured. Really good shooter, good leadership as well. Xavier Edwards, played receiver with him. He's really strong, like, offensively, and then defensively he's athletic. Vander Truex, sophomore, really, he crashes the offensive glass hard, which is big for us because, I mean, when you get off, it's a rebound, it's huge. You know, momentum shift, usually you get a bucket right after it. And yeah, it rounds out our sideline. Then we have Brendan Peterson, Chase Pavlovich, are seniors, who are both really, really nice guys, really nice teammates. They do a lot of, like, the junkyard dog work, you would say, you know, play defense, dive on loose balls. So yeah.
Are a lot of those guys football and basketball players?
Yeah. Brendan and Xavier and Vander are, yeah.
Okay.
So a couple, yeah.
And does that, I mean, I'm assuming that only helps in so many ways to be around each other more often, where it just trickles into the different seasons for you.
Yeah, I know, obviously, playing with football with them, I just with them pretty much fall and winter, so learn a lot about them and, you know, in their life and get closer to them.
Again, we're talking to Colin Preby from D.C. Everest, senior for the Evergreen Boys basketball team here on 98.9 WXCO. I imagine that this season is almost like trying to jump into a car that's moving, because the season's going on, and then, hey, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Got to jump into that vehicle and try to get up to speed as quickly as possible. What did you find out in the early games? Was it more difficult than maybe even you thought? Because I imagine that when you got out on the court, you felt pretty good physically, mm-hmm, but I imagine missing that game time was kind of difficult.
Yeah, especially so during the summer, we played really well as a team. I thought our chemistry got a lot better. And then obviously coming back in the season, it was kind of weird because I was kind of just, it's like, feels like you're just kind of getting thrown back out there. So kind of, you know, guys sort of adapting to different things in the game. And, you know, we started getting a lot more like pick and roll stuff. And it was, you know, I was kind of like, I was trying to like move around, but like maybe I was running into guys, or, you know, I wasn't mentally, like, I haven't played the game in a while. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, it's weird because you kind of just forget things kind of like, it's just, you forget where guys are going to be, and then we just had to redo our offense kind of mid-season, right, which is obviously hard, but I think we're hitting our right stride right about now, and it's perfect for playoffs.
And I got to imagine it's, and we've talked off air about it with you coming back, like, it's just, you need time to hit your stride, because as hard as you try to recreate that in practice, you can't create that game experience, especially with the diversity and all these teams that you're facing. We're talking about all these teams wailing on each other at different times and bringing different things to the table. So I got to imagine that in and of itself is a little bit challenging that it just takes some time, and which is why you got exciting things coming down the stretch here with, mm-hmm, you know, just one game left of the regular season and playoffs starting.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially cardio was the biggest thing for me. Especially, you know, game reps, it's kind of like even practice, it's a different type of cardio. Like, first couple games, I would just get really tired and trying to push through that. But I'd say now I'm getting a lot of my cardio's back. And then just the mental aspect of, you know, trusting my foot and making, like, knowing that if I land hard, like, everything's going to be all right. And also another thing was, you know, kind of my leg was a lot weaker than my left one. So just it kind of felt uneven for a little bit. But, you know, and my right leg would get more fatigued. Like, I started getting shin splints early on, and which everything's kind of going away now, but it's still a little, like, weaker than my other leg. So it's trying to get that back.
How do you develop that trust? I mean, for those of us who don't have to worry about going out there and trying to compete at a very high level, it says, oh, I got to trust it. That's easier said than done. Was there anything that you were able to do to try to help that process along?
Yeah, it is hard to do. But honestly, it just came with playing. I just tried to play as normal as I could and not try to, you know, use my left leg more or not use my right leg as much. I mean, that's how you get injured again. Mm-hmm. It's like not using the thing. But I just keep playing and just it's pretty much just trust it. Trust that it's going to be all right and the doctors are right and you're ready to play.
Let me ask you about last week, because you won by two road games in conference by 19 and 20 points. Has something clicked for your team? I mean, just from the outside, it looks like those were two really nice wins. I mean, obviously, Merrill and Rapids are not at the top of the conference, but still, you went on the road and controlled those games. Mm-hmm. Has something clicked with this group?
Yeah, I think we, you know, obviously, Merrill and Rapids are two pretty good teams. They're better than I think they get advertised, but especially on the road, winning by 20 was big for our team. I think we're starting to play a lot more in transition, which is good for us. I think it suits us really well. And I think we're just getting more confident. Like, we kind of know what each other are doing. And, you know, we've played for like 8 games now as a starting rotation. You know, switching things up is hard. But I think we're just hitting our stride and becoming a lot more confident playing with each other.
Just based on you guys hitting your stride, you know, it's always different when players come in at different points in the season that are key cogs on that team, and then you got to adjust a little bit, and then I think you get it rolling the right direction if coaches, players, everybody has it all going the way it should. You think you're dangerous at that number 11s? I mean, I just think they're underseeded. They're one of those teams where, because of the way things went, it makes it a little more challenging.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're ready.
I'm taking notes over here.
I know.
So you're talking to the West guy.
Yeah. I gotta ask. I would think so. I mean, there's other teams like that too, but I think Everest is one of them.
No. Yeah. I think, you know, we don't take the 11 seed really personally. I think playing against West, I mean, it's any like kid's kind of dream playing at Everest or West, a playoff game. So I mean, that'll be fun. But I mean, to be a state champ or to get far in place, you have to beat the best teams. Yeah. And, you know, for football, I think it was a great example. We were a 7 seed, and we just went in, and we believed in ourselves and just did what we believed we could do. And, you know, the scoreboard would tell us at the end.
That's real funny, though, because you had to win 3 road games. And I think I was talking to Mr. Matthews, your AD. Basically, it's blowing out the budget because you had all those long bus rides, you know.
There's a lot. They're far, too.
I know. They were exactly right. Again, we're talking to Cohen Preby of the D.C. Everest Evergreens. We're going to talk about your game tomorrow and the game against West in a few moments, but let's step away again. Obviously, you haven't had the free time that you may have had last year when we talked, because you're trying to get ready to get back out of the court. But when you do have an opportunity to step away from it all, what is it that you like to do?
Honestly, when I was hurt, I kind of focused more on school, which my parents liked, but I didn't like as much. But I'm a pretty big sports guy, but otherwise, you know, I like just to like play video games, hang back with my friends, and just do stuff like that.
Basketball-wise, is there anybody that maybe at the pro level, college level, could be whatever, that you kind of look at as the kind of player that you admire or would like to be like?
Yeah, I like the game of Stephen Curry, obviously. I'm a pretty big three-point shooter, and so seeing him shoot threes and the way he moves without the ball is really, like, really good for, like, what he does. And just, you know, he's kind of, undersized in the NBA. He's, like, 6'3", but just the stuff he does to get open and to create shots is just crazy.
You mentioned you focused a little bit more on school. Did you find or maybe you have in mind already, like, kind of a niche in what do you have a college or you plan on attending? Do you know where you want to go? Any sports afterwards? And kind of if you've decided on the direction you want to go for occupation major yet?
Yep. I'm going to play basketball at St. Norbert next year, which will be good for me. I really like the coaches. Good, really good program. And the school fit best for me. I want to go into like the medical field. hopefully eventually up to a pediatrician, but that's law school. So, you know, after 4 years going to midterm and then really decide what I want to do from there.
You've logged a lot of minutes of basketball, obviously. I think it's cool when you get that much varsity time and you can look back and say, yeah, I did it for 4 years. Yeah. I was up there the whole time. I think a lot of guys have dreams in whatever circumstances or don't always allow them to do that. So you got plenty of time to analyze your game. Going from your senior year here to the college level next year, what do you think is something you're going to have to further develop or add or tweak or improve on to make it adjust to that next level?
I think I was talking to some guys about, you know, translating their game to college. One big thing this spring and summer, I have to get stronger. Just, you know, get in the weight room a lot, building my upper body, like my shoulders, to be able to, you know, muscle around guys and not get pushed around. And then just like athleticism, like obviously they're a lot faster, games played a lot different. And then just being able to play game reps and kind of like slow down, just because college guys obviously stronger, faster. So the games that, but then just continue to, you know, my skill just keep sharpening like every year.
Was there special contact with the coaches at St. Norbert, anybody involved with St. Norbert, when you're going through an injury? Do they get involved in any way? Do they try to give you advice? I'm just kind of curious about that, because obviously they want you to come there as healthy as possible. Was there any contact, or do they kind of say, hey, we trust what you're doing over there at Everest?
They trust me, but they checked in on me. I would say like twice a week they would text me about, you know, how I'm doing, what I was doing in rehab, and just making sure that I was ready to come back for season, which is what I ultimately wanted to do. So yeah.
But go ahead. No. Chad and I looked at each other.
I know.
There was a big pause on the air. Let's go back to just that being in the time from a freshman to a senior here. I've got to imagine, this is just my thoughts, it's going to be a lot more challenging. You know, you've been up there so long, it's got to be a lot more challenging to depart on your high school career. So I guess looking at it, what do you think is been the biggest deal for you? Just, it could be any high school sports, just for playing high school sports, and especially in basketball, for doing it so long. What's going to be maybe the thing you miss most about it, since you've got a special experience, I think, because you've logged so many minutes?
Yeah, well, first of all, playing from senior freshman, I mean, it's still crazy to think about that. I have two guaranteed games left. It went by fast. Like, when I just look back at it, like, I saw when I was a freshman, I saw one of my teammates in the community, and he's, like, 21 years old. So it's kind of crazy just, like, catch up with him. It's like, dang, I'm still in high school.
Right.
But I'm just going to miss, like, the atmosphere. I mean, playing in front of your classmates and, you know, people you know throughout the community, and, like, especially against West, like, high-energy games. I'm going to miss playing against, like, any of the Valley teams, just playing against guys I know. Like, I play AAU with some of them, so just playing against people I know is definitely what I'm going to miss the most.
Real fast about the, like, AAU in the offseason. We had Griffin Lang on a few weeks ago, and it sounded like he's ready to take the next step in his life in terms of academics and in that realm, and that there's a lot that's asked of young people in terms of not just the high school aspect, but the off-season aspect. How do you feel about all of that? Was it sometimes like, man, it's almost too much? Were you someone that thrived on that AAU experience? How do you look at it?
Yeah, obviously it's a lot. I mean, you go from season, you maybe get like a 3-week break, and then you go right into AAU. So it's definitely a lot of basketball because, you know, we're still practicing. You play almost every weekend. You know, you're traveling all over. But I think AAU is really good for recruiting. You get exposed to a lot, and I think you play against a lot of different like styles of basketball. I think down south they play a lot more like fast paced. There tends to be a lot more athletic guys, so against, you know, knowing how to play against that will ultimately help you, and just, you know, you create new friends and everything like that.
Let's talk about tomorrow, and actually we'll talk about the next two games, because it's kind of a fun way to end the regular season and start the playoffs. You got East tomorrow night, and then you got West in the playoff game a week from Friday. What about the East game? Because it was before you came back, right? They played the first time, and it was a tight game, and East was able to pull it out, and this time it's on your court. What do you expect tomorrow night? Obviously, it's a great game to kind of launch into the postseason, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm expecting like a high-energy game. I know Jesse just got back from mono, so you know they're kind of trying to get ready to roll for playoffs, kind of basically get their stride, kind of like we are. And I think it's a big one just in the fact that you want to win going into playoffs and be on the right foot. Like, we don't play for another week, mm-hmm. so we don't want to hang on a loss and, you know, kind of be down on ourselves, you know, be high up energy, you know, after a good win against a good East team who's number one seed. And then, yeah, just be ready for West.
Well, what about that game? Because obviously, I tell you, I don't know. I mean, I think Cade Felch had the game of his career the first time around.
And Xavier,
and then Xavier had the game of his career. I hope there's nobody else that's sort of waiting to do that. But so seriously, I mean, obviously, those are two very competitive games, and obviously, there's going to be a lot of energy in the field house. As you said, you guys know each other.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. But after you get through tomorrow night's game, how are you going to look at preparing for that game? Because, I mean, I think the emotion of a playoff game, especially as a senior, is something that you have to be aware of, correct?
Yeah. I'm just not trying to look at it as my last game. You know, kind of think about not trying to dwell on, like, dang, my career's almost over. And, you know, be confident. And obviously, Wes is I think they play hard. They're physical. Mm-hmm. So getting ready for that. And yeah, just preparing as much as we can, just like any game we would, not just because it's playoffs.
What kind of matchup is Griffin Lang?
I played against Griffin since my freshman year, so a really good player. He's very patient. He makes the right play. I'm looking forward to playing. But also, while I was talking about my mom, even if when we win, I feel bad. Like, me and him we're close family friends.
Right, right.
So I feel bad for him that, like, you know, season's over, and it's just kind of like we're done playing each other. Yeah. So it's kind of just something sad, but, you know, obviously not going to think about that during the game. But
for your team to make the run you guys want to make, obviously, and for your season to continue and last as many games as possible, what do you think you guys have to do consistently down the stretch here that'll ultimately make you the most successful on continuing the season? Because it's one and done if you don't.
I think we've been playing a lot better defensively. I think playoffs is won defensively. If you can, you know, guard up and play hard, I think that's key in winning playoffs, because sometimes you just don't hit your shots. And especially when there's like that, like Friday's going to be a lot of energy. You know, you're going to be some people get a little nervous, and, you know, it's a big shot here and there. But, you know, I think we play best in transition, continue to play in transition, just, you know, playing hard, winning 50-50 balls, I think will really help our team.
Real fast, before our final question, do you get nervous in big situations?
I used to, not anymore, though. I kind of, you know, from playing football to basketball and playing basketball all my 4 years, it's kind of just, I don't really think about it anymore. I've had plenty of situations that I was able to grow from, and I just don't really think about it.
That's a good way to be. Yeah. And I guess our final question, and now it's a really good question, since it is your senior year, as you wrap up a long high school athletic career, what piece of advice would you give a freshman like yourself when you first came in at DC Everest, that piece of advice to take as a freshman to carry through their career?
Yeah. So I got a couple things, but one is, you know, don't take your time for granted. Like I said earlier, it goes by it's like a blink of an eye. And by the time you're going to college, then you'll be working. So just don't take your time for granted. What we're talking about with football is don't play, focus on one sport, do whatever like you love. If you play three sports, two sports, doesn't really matter, but, you know, do what you enjoy, and then just, you know, school, focus on school. School's obviously big. You get a lot of scholarships for doing good in school. Just work hard, and, you know, the best will come.
I like the don't take the time for granted, because when you tell younger players that, they look like you, like you're full of it.
Yeah,
you're sitting there right now, like, it's almost gone.
Eventually, yeah.
So all good stuff. Thank you.
Cohen Preby, thanks again. Congrats on a wonderful career. Congrats on battling back from the injury as well. Great to see you back on the court to wrap things up.
Thank you.
We're going to take a timeout, and then we're going to come back and have our second guest of the night from Mosinee High School, their head girls basketball coach, Josh Howell. That's coming up next here on 98.9 WXCO.
A look at the individual state wrestling tournament set for this weekend in Madison. I'm Travis Wilson, and this is a WISSports.net Minute brought to you by Just a Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. More high school sports news after this. You may have heard of Just a Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells, one of the country's premier destinations for youth sports and events, but did you know that Just a Game does so much more? Just a Game also delivers end-to-end apparel, equipment, and event solutions. With their state-of-the-art screen printing and embroidery facility, they can help with branding for your team and business items, including uniforms, apparel, and more. Just a Game also offers digital services that include a cashless digital platform and event live streaming. Just a Game has also added a second brand new facility in Reedsburg. Find more information at justagame.com. The WIAA Individual Wrestling State Tournament will be held this weekend, with 560 boys athletes and 192 girls athletes competing in one of the crown jewels of the prep sports calendar. Taking place at the Kohl Center in Madison from Thursday through Saturday, more than 340 different programs are represented by this year's qualifiers. There are 14 defending champions in the boys' side returning this year, including a pair of wrestlers looking to join Elite Company as four-time state champs. In D2, Danny Heiser of Evansville is the top seed in the 157-pound bracket and has three previous titles under his belt. Koji Campbell from Kenosha St. Joseph is looking for his fourth championship as well, seated first in the 126-pound bracket of Division 3, where he is currently undefeated. Only 29 previous wrestlers have captured four state titles. There are 17 boys' state qualifiers that are undefeated heading to Madison, along with three undefeated girls' wrestlers. One of those girls' athletes is New London senior Haley Krieger, who is 46-0 this year and looking to become the first female athlete to win four state titles. A reminder that this is one of the busiest weeks of the prep sports calendar, with girls' basketball and regional play, gymnastics and hockey sectionals, state wrestling, plus the last week of the boys' hoops regular season. This has been a WISSports.net Minute. Check us out online at WISSports.net.
Welcome back. Big High School Sports Show presented by K5 Construction on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Again, thanks to DC Ever Senior Cohen Preby for joining us. And now our coach guest for this week from Mosinee High School, head girls basketball coach Josh Howe. And coach, number one, thank you for making the trek a little north here to Wausau and join us tonight.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Season number one. And it's never easy, and it can be a program that is struggling in terms of wins and losses and talent, and it can be a team that has done well. And I think Mosinee has had some really good girls basketball teams, so we come into that kind of situation, but there are always challenges. What's been the biggest challenge in your first year?
I think I was on the boys' staff for a little while, and just watching the girls' staff, there was a lot of turnover, a lot of stuff going on, just coming out of COVID, just never having the stability. So the biggest goal my staff and I have had this year is just give the girls some sort of consistency. And mm-hmm. I came in, I kind of joined, they really didn't have any coaches on staff two summers ago, and our athletic director came to me and was like, can you run our summer stuff? And I'm like, okay, I guess I can. I'll give it a shot. And I just loved it right away. And I feel like what I've tried to give the girls is a little bit of consistency, consistent voice, be there every day for them. And kind of hold that expectation and get back to where our program was not too long ago. Because we've been a little bit down. We've been successful, but not necessarily at the standard that we've been in the past, like the early 2000s teams mm-hmm. that you look at. And even the 2022 team was really, really solid. So that's probably been the biggest challenge, but I have such a great group of girls that make it easy. Mm-hmm. It's been pretty smooth sailing this first year, and I have a great staff that anything I ask them to do, they do it. Obviously, the biggest factor in it is my wife allowing me to do it.
You're a smart man, I tell you.
Good props yeah. for mentioning that.
You find out pretty quickly as a coach, if you don't have a spouse that supports you with that, it gets shut down pretty quickly. So she's a big reason for that, mm-hmm. too.
Well, in year one, coach, you've had, you know, 17-6 overall, 10-2 in the conference, which is, like you said, it's great. Good job. What has been that you would describe, you know, either in how you play or how it's managed, the keys to your success this year so far, and good things on the mend to keep coming as the season continues?
Yeah, so coming back from last year, obviously Taylan was over 20 points a game, one of the best players in the state, one of the best athletes in the state, in my opinion. We needed somebody to step up and take the scoring load off of her shoulders a little bit. Like, she's incredible. she can't do it all by herself. So we needed somebody to step up, and specifically with scoring, and we just really couldn't find that second option early in the year. We had a couple girls that would play well. What never left was defense, defensively. Our defensive expectation was always there. We were holding team. We were winning games like 45-40 at the beginning of the year, and I'm like, okay, this is great. I'm an offensive guy. I've always kind of been an offensive guy, and I'm like, we need to score some points. And then once our girls got a little bit of confidence, now all of a sudden I think our top five scorers all have season highs of over 20 points. So we kind of found our groove with that. Early it was a struggle because teams were just like, all right, we'll just guard Taylan. And we really didn't have an answer for it, and she got frustrated with it. But we've basically all of our starters have emerged. Our girls off the bench have emerged to be threats, and we've built that confidence up. And I'm like, no, you need to shoot that shot. Like, you need to be aggressive. If you're open, we need you to shoot the shot, and we need you to make the right play. So that's kind of been – but like I said just a minute ago, defense never left. Like, our girls, I took over a program. I have nothing to do with it, by the way. Their youth coaches taught them to play really, really hard, and that's what's never left. Defense and effort has always been top notch. I didn't have very much to do with that. I just kind of came in and I was like, oh, these girls work really hard. So I appreciate that.
Let me ask you then, though, everybody has a philosophy. When you come into a program, you want to set some, I think, building blocks, mm-hmm. kind of build that program and try to, you know, make sure that you have as much success, both in terms of wins, but also in terms of the experience for the girls. What would you say is the top building blocks for a program that you want to build?
So it's kind of, I think kind of the old school coaching model is I'm going to make my players fit to my system. And I think that's kind of getting phased out a little bit. I think you need to create what's going to allow your girls to be as successful as possible. We're really fast. We're really good athletes. So it would not make sense for me to be running a two-post blocker mover like Tony Bennett, Virginia offense. Like, that just wouldn't make sense. We don't run a lot of zone because we're not very tall, but we press teams because we're fast. That might change next year, but we're going to have good athletes. And when I came into the program a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I was like, we are fast. We are athletic. We need to use that to our advantage. So offensively, we need to attack gaps. Defensively, we need to fly around. We need to switch aggressively, jump passing lanes. So I think that's kind of been our identity, but who knows? A couple of years down the road, I could see that completely changing. I don't know that I have one philosophy that I stick to. I hope as a coach and as I grow in my coaching career, I can look at my team and say, how can we put these girls in the best position to be successful? What offense does that mean? What defense does that mean? How can we put them in the right spots at the right time?
Is it ever difficult? Because like you said, you know, it's this. There was some success before you've been there. You kind of know what you're getting into with the kids. So it's not like one of those things where you want to break everything completely apart and build it all back up, but yet you want to have your own twist on the things that you feel are right for the team. Has it ever been a tough road to tightrope that a little bit, to leave some things in place that are really good, yet curb your own stuff the way you feel that it'll make the team the most successful?
Yeah, it's kind of unique because some of the players on our team's parents were on those early 2000s teams. So like a couple of our seniors and Bridget, our starting center, who's a sophomore, her mom was on those state teams in the early 2000s. So so their presence definitely is felt. They've been so supportive of me too. Like, I've had a great group of parents, like very little like negative interactions, if any. They've been very supportive, and they kind of are buying into the fact that me and my staff are going to put their girls in the best position possible. There definitely is a standard, though. Like, losing is not really an option for a lot of sports at our school. And being at the top of the conference kind of is an expectation. Like, being in that top two, top three. I coach football, too. It's the same thing. Like, we are expecting to be up there. And if you're not, it's okay, what do we got to do to fix that next year? And I think that's kind of where we've been on the girls' side the last 2 years. And it's nice to kind of return to, quote, like business as usual, to steal our boys program motto for the year. But it does feel good to get back to that.
And what do you, you know, you said you've been on the boys side in the Great Northern, you've done it in football, you know, you're doing it. What have you, you know, conferences, you know, conferences, when you know them, it's just a war. What do you think about the Great Northern Conference?
So I'm from a suburb, a small town outside of Milwaukee, and my longest conference game in high school for any sport was 45 minutes to Wisconsin Lutheran. So when I got here 5 years ago and I was coaching football, and I'm like, wait, our closest conference game is 50 minutes? What are you talking about? We got Spash, we got DC Everest, but we're just that weird size. So there have been some battles for sure, either on football or the boys' side or the girls' side for basketball. The top of the conference always seems to be like right up there with the best teams in the state. And then the biggest complaint probably or gripe is that the bottom of the conference usually isn't super competitive, but you have small schools that are doing everything they can. But, for example, like Northland Pines, when I was on the boys' staff, they had a phenomenal boys' team that we had mm-hmm. absolute battles with. Mm-hmm. So that ebb and flow is going to happen in conferences. But yeah, on the girls' side, it's been competitive. The GNC's pumped out some good girls' basketball players in recent history. I'm not totally brushed up on my GNC girls' basketball history, but if you look back, there's some phenomenal athletes and players that have come out of it. So
again, we're talking to Mosinee head girls' basketball coach Josh Howell here on 98.9 WXCO. You talk about maybe, you know, within the conference sometimes there may be a few games that are not at the level, but you really schedule good non-conference opponents. I mean, I was looking at here some of the, I mean, Wittenberg-Burnham went obviously 24-0 on the season. The two conference games, obviously, against Lakeland, the game early against St. Mary Catholic. You had a stretch in January where I imagine you learned a few things. Lakeland, Xavier, and Neillsville back-to-back-to-back. Talk about those games and talk about maybe what you learned there, because then late in the season here, just recently, you beat Rice Lake. And obviously, that's a good basketball team. I think a number one seed as well. Obviously, maybe a few bruises, but they harden and make you tougher team. Make you a tougher team, don't they?
Absolutely. I sat down with my staff this summer, and I looked at, or maybe it was last spring when we were starting to put together our schedule a little bit. And I like having a little control on the schedule, so you can schedule those good teams. And I'm like, guys, should we just schedule a schedule so we can win 22 games? And we just like looked at each other, like, no, like we need to find the best possible teams. I don't know if we're going to beat them this year. First year of a new program, first year of a new system, new scheme. But in next year, our non-conference gets even tougher. Like the teams we've been scheduling on that, and that's exactly how we want it. I'll take a 17-6 record against really, really good teams and knock off some of those good teams over a 22-2 record or 22-3 any day of the week. So you're right; it prepares us for the better teams. That 3-game stretch in January was not fun, but we learned a lot from it.
Right.
And with the Rice Lake game, we knew we could play with these teams, but that game was so important to us because we had to beat one of those teams. Mm-hmm. So every team we've lost who's been a 1 seed or a 2 seed, but we haven't like beat like really good teams. We beat some solid teams, but we haven't beat those like top like Lakeland, like Rice Lake. So playing them and beating them was huge for our confidence, and we're playing really good basketball right now.
Let's ask about, because I got to ask about Lakeland, because obviously it's sort of a mini conference tournament you got here Friday and Saturday with Medford on Friday, and then potentially and likely whoever wins your Medford game will play Lakeland on Saturday. One of the things that really jumped out early in the year is Lakeland scores a lot of points, but you were able to keep them down and 3-point games both times. What'd you find out in those two games? And obviously, you found out probably you don't like losing by 3 points, but at the same time, nobody has really battled Lakeland like that in the GNC in quite a while. Can you talk a little bit about that potential matchup? And I know as a coach, you hate to do this, but you can blame it on the radio guy. But talk a little bit about what Lakeland brings to the table and the challenge that they were this year in the regular season and potentially in the playoffs.
For sure. Christina Wiemetz, one of the best players, one of the best high school players, boys or girls, I've seen in a long time. Her jump shot is so lightning quick. She was at the volleyball line in one of our home games, and we had a defender on her, and she gave her an inch, and she just drilled it right in her face. And it was just like, okay, I don't know what to tell you. Good defense. So she's incredible. Obviously, Melissa has those girls playing really, really hard. They buy into their system. The story that doesn't get told that in that first Lakeland game is we were down 17 with 7 minutes left or something similar to that, and we went on like a 15-0 run with our pressure, turning them over and then converting. And we had chances to win both of those games. So we knew, and this is where I take a little bit of comfort in where we're at as a team. We played hard. We did not play well in either of those games. We were 4-for-24 from the 3-point line in the first matchup, 4-for-18 or 4-for-16 in the second matchup. So we did not shoot well. We did not play well. We played hard, but we did not play well. We played good on the defensive end. You're not going to beat that team scoring 43 and 45 points or whatever we scored. So we learned a lot about ourselves. I think we went into that first matchup. I don't think our girls necessarily believed we could beat them, right? Because it's been a long time since, none of those girls on that team have beat Lakeland at the varsity level. So I don't think we believed it the first time. The second time came around, I still don't know that we 100% believed it, but then I think we found ourselves in that game, up one with a minute left, and we're like, holy cow, like we have a chance. Yeah. And I know our girls are itching to get back to that, but my message yesterday at practice was Coach Brooks, my assistant, and I were on the boys' staff when we were a one seed and we lost to a Merrill team that we beat earlier in the year. So I'm like, we're not thinking about Lakeland at all.
Right.
We are fully focused on Medford right now. They got two studs, Baumgartner and Klingbeil Taylor, that have had really good years.
Medford has a lot of Baumgartners.
They do. And I coach against Logan too. So exactly. They're all awesome
long
players.
Long time coming. Yep.
Yeah, but for sure, having a top tier team like that in your conference is good. For sure, makes it competitive. Two fun games. Yeah.
Should be fun atmospheres.
Yeah.
And that you kind of led into it, your message to the team. That was going to be my question is, we talked off air, you know, not having that first, you do well enough and you don't have that first game. And now what do you do to keep these guys bit when they're game hungry? And you got practice after practice. It's like, okay, we can only go through the same stuff so much time and I can only do this so much. And I don't want to bring in too many people to go against you because I don't want you injured and it gets to be overly competitive. And you got all these questions. And then you turn around, like you said, and we can't look past the team. We beat twice because you don't want to be the time that they get you the third time. And then you roll around and see another conference team in the next round, too. What's kind of been your work in progress here throughout this week to just kind of keep them hungry? I mean, it's easier said than done, I'd imagine.
I'm still trying to figure it out. So it's a great question. We gave the girls off Monday. My philosophy is we earn the bye, so we're going to give them a bye. And Monday was such a nice day. I'm like, girls, go home. Like, seriously, go do something else other than basketball. We'll come back ready to go. This is unique because we play Medford, and we know Medford. Like, there won't be very much scout there. Like, right. We're going to run through their plays. We're going to run through their offense and defense. We've played them twice. We've scouted them heavily already. And like you said, Lakeland being the two seed on our side, we know that scout pretty inside and out. So, like, last year we had Hayward as the five seed that we hosted, and then Menominee. It was a lot of game prep. Like, hey, I have no idea what Hayward runs. Let's figure it out. Let's figure out what Menominee runs. So it'll be a unique challenge tomorrow, figuring out, like, okay, what should we do with practice? We got to stay sharp. We're playing good basketball, but just scrimmaging against ourselves, like, at this point in the year doesn't give us a whole lot of benefit. Bringing people in, I've had a couple alumni come in and practice with us. That's always good. I love doing that. But yeah, like I told you guys, I almost wanted a Tuesday game because we're playing so well right now, and my girls are so hungry to play basketball again. So we're looking forward to Friday for sure.
You are playing well, but what is the one thing that you still maybe in the back of your mind think, hey, we have to still take these strides forward in order to do what you'd like to do over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things we've worked on with our guards and our posts is, like, we do these moves in practice. Like, we've been working on finishing, like getting to the other side of the rim, step throughs, all that good stuff. And then we get in the game and sometimes we revert back to prayers, like throwing it up. I hope it goes in.
Right.
And it's like, hey, so we break it down in film. This is a chance where you could have jump stop, shot fake, pivot, and step through. And the more like non-competitive games that we've had recently, that's, in my eyes, that's a chance to work on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the message during the game. Hey, you went in for a layup. I know you scored it, but could you have shot faked and got to the other side of the rim? So working on all those little skills that we've been working on, and we've invested a lot of time in our post players because neither of them were really natural posts to begin their careers. And so that's, we're starting to see that pay off, and hopefully when we get to that big stage, it pays off even more.
And I always like to, you know, a lot of times I don't think coaches get enough credit for what they do. I mean,
coming from a coach.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to say. Coming from a teacher, coach, yeah. So I don't think coaches get enough credit in what they do and the time they give and how they treat these kids like their own, you know, because so much was looked at, well, they didn't like them, they didn't play them enough, or they said this to them in this context. It's like, no, it's just out of care and trying to get them to be the best versions of themselves. So many times I think coaches from year one to year two, you not only learn a lot of yourself, but sometimes you even overanalyze it. Like, that was my first year. I didn't know enough. Now what do I got to do? What do you think you've done well this year in your first year? Because obviously it shows on, you know, what you're talking about and the proud stuff you're sharing about in the record-wise and where you're standing. I think it shows that you're doing a great job that first year. Give yourself some props. What do you think you're doing well this year?
Yeah. So the first...
Sorry,
that's okay.
The hardest question you've received.
I think he needs to give himself some props.
I totally botched this analogy, actually, in my in one of my classes yesterday. But what's the saying? Like, born on third and act like you hit a triple?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I don't want to do. Like, trust me, if I wasn't here, these girls would be very, very successful. You look at the Jersey girls, are two of the best athletes in the state. You look at Bridget Fry, our starting center, was our player of the year in volleyball. Britt Fitzgerald is a all-state cross-country and track athlete. Like, these girls would have been successful. I think what I do well as a coach as far as philosophy is I believe a happy, healthy athlete will outperform an overworked, beat down athlete every single day of the week. So I think we are really good at building our athletes up. You will never walk into my gym and hear anybody cussing at a player. You will never walk into our gym and see somebody just ripping somebody a new one. It's praise in public and reprimand or criticize in private. And I think we've done a good job of that. And it's so important with girls basketball too, building that confidence. And I'm still learning that. I'm not old enough to be their dads, but I have a little sister who's a junior. It's my wife's little sister, so my sister-in-law. So I do view these girls as my little sisters kind of running around, and that's how I care for them. And I feel like when you invest, and I know my staff feels the same way, I feel like when you invest that time in somebody, you can tell. You can tell when a coach cares about you. I'm not doing it for me. I love winning. I love the game of basketball, but this group of girls is very special. It's the most I've laughed that I can ever remember. Like, and I was very nervous jumping over to the girls' side. I'm like, I don't know if I can coach girls basketball. Like, I don't know how high school girls operate or anything. But that nervousness was quickly taken away when I realized how fun they are to be around. Now, sometimes we have a little too much fun and we need to like lock it in a little bit. Like, all right, we've had three straight turnovers. Can we stop giggling?
Yeah.
It's been an awesome group. They've made my job very easy. They listen extremely well, and they take criticism or constructive criticism really well too.
If you get on Friday, you get the W against Medford. What do you think you will have done well as a team then? What are the keys for you guys to win that game, basically?
Yeah, so they throw a couple of different defenses at people. They have just Kayla Baumgartner around the rim is such a good shot blocker. I mean, we got so mad the last time because I think she probably had a dozen blocks. Like, and our girls just kept driving in, and we just, hey, keep being aggressive, and she just sent them to the third row. So we got a shot fake around her, get her up in the air, get her in foul trouble like the first time we played. We got to limit Taylor Klingbeil. She's had an awesome year. She's averaging close to 20 a game, and she struggles with our athletes, as a lot of people do. So we got to make sure we're playing fast, we're playing loose. We'll run multiple bodies at them. I'm not a believer in just stick one girl on one-on-one and say, hey, go shut her down. So we have to move the basketball. We got to get back to scoring. I've never really worried about the defense because our defense always travels and our defense is always there. People ask me, like, how much time in practice do you spend on defense? I'm like, not really, hardly any. We spend a lot of time trying to work on our offense because our defense comes natural. But we got to make sure we limit Kayla and Taylor getting to the rim and then take care of their shooters on the outside too, and make sure we rebound because we're smaller than them.
So. Mosinee head girls basketball coach Josh Howell. I know this regional weekend's always it's an interesting one. The back to backs. It's always you don't get much time to really enjoy it if you get it done on Friday. But yeah, hopefully it will be a terrific, fun weekend for you and your girls. And thanks again for coming on by.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
We'll take a 1 minute break and then come right back with our final few minutes on the program. Big High School Sports Show presented by K5 Construction on 98.9 WXCO. On Saturday, the Central Wisconsin Storm girls hockey team looks to punch their ticket to the state tournament. The Storm will take on the Hayward Hurricanes in a sectional championship game. Hear all the exciting action live on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app, starting with the pregame show at 10:50 a.m. and the opening faceoff at 11 a.m. Storm Hockey on 98.9 WXCO is brought to you by the Cloverbelt Credit Union, Red Robin Restaurants, Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, Coast to Coast Marketing. It's the Central Wisconsin Storm taking on the Hayward Hurricanes in a girls' hockey sectional championship game. Saturday, starting with the pregame show at 10:50, opening face-off at 11 on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. And welcome back. Big High School Sports Show, presented by K5 Construction on 98.9 WXCO. Great guest again. Almost took the whole hour.
And again, they just paint pictures of programs we haven't heard about, and you and I are talking about off paper, or if we've seen a couple of the games in person. So great job getting to hear both Coach and Preby share what they know about their players.
Well, the boys' basketball brackets were released this past Sunday. Let's start with the Division Five, just to start off differently. Anything got Assumption as a number 7 seed. They'll be in action Tuesday against number 10 New Lisbon. The winner plays Columbus Catholic, and I think an Assumption Columbus game in the second round would be rather interesting. And then that's in sectional number 3. In sectional number 2, number 12 seeded Newman Catholic will be at number 5 seeded Wabino Leona, a game that we'll have here on 98.9 WXCO on Tuesday night. Northern Lutheran, a number 6 seed, will take on a CWC North opponent, Gresham. So anything jump out about those?
Well, the Newman game, I always find Newman interesting because you play in a very tough conference against, other than Assumption, Division 4 teams, and how that weighs out with other conferences and how they're playing against teams in their own conference. So I think that could be an interesting match. They got enough scoring punch to win that game on the road, in what Newman has. An Assumption, very interested to see how they do against Stratford Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then if they roll in that one or play competitive in that one, I could see some good things coming for them in the playoffs.
And Division 4, Sectional 2, Auburndale 1 seed, Stratford a 2, Marathon a 4, Phillips a 5, Edgar a 7, bottom half of that same bracket, Bondiwell 1. So a lot of really good basketball teams in that bracket.
I'd be interested to see Marathon could get Phillips again after Phillips already beat Chemawagan twice in their conference schedule. So I think that would be kind of a fun one to watch. Stratford right out of the gates could have Edgar again in the first round if they beat Abbotsford, which they should because they beat them earlier in the conference. So I think that whole bracket's just a mess because all those Merrillwood South teams that are Division 4 are in there and looking to wail on each other. And we've seen anything can happen over the years despite what you've done in your previous conference schedule.
We only got about a minute to go, and we'll go deeper next week on all this stuff. But Division 1, we talked about Everest and West. I mean, what a massive matchup next Friday night. You got Marshfield, a number 2 seed, Spash, a number 7 seed. What do you think? Do you think the Valley's going to do anything in this bracket?
I hope so. I know, just generally, right, I think some of these teams are on the verge of turning the corner a little bit because they've gotten their roster set, and it sounds like they're going to just be ready for the playoffs. And a couple teams, I think there's still a little questions. Are they coming back well from the injury? I think they'll make it happen. They've had a very good overall conference schedule out of all those teams. That conference has been very strong. So I'm hoping being a local supporter, I'm hoping good things happen for them once the playoffs
roll around. 15 seconds to go. East, the number 1 seed in Division 2. Rhinelander, number 2. Who gets through it?
I think East can do it. I think they got the key positions in the scoring punch and guys that have logged a lot of minutes. I think East is going to pull through that one.
We'll talk more about some of those potential matchups next week. We'll be back next Wednesday from 6 till 8. We'll see you then.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chad.
Big High School Sports Show on WXCO.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With limited incomes not keeping up with the lingering effects of inflation, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power, or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.kwwf.org.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A child has died in Lubbock, Texas, after contracting the measles during an outbreak in that area. KRLD's Chris Fox.
Hospital officials at Covenant Children's in Lubbock confirming the death of an unvaccinated school-aged child. Also, the 20 being hospitalized, all unvaccinated children, ages ranging from infants to predominantly school age. Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Lara Johnson says what makes this so dangerous is the low vaccination rate.
And as we see those rates start to decline across the nation, then we'll see more outbreaks.
There is still hope.
Having two doses of measles vaccine confers 97% lifetime immunity.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
The Food and Drug Administration has canceled a key step in the process to make next season's influenza vaccines. CBS's Alexander Tin with the latest.
Usually the FDA's outside vaccine advisor.